Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam and welcome to the Household Express, a program dedicated to all your homemaking needs. And I am Sister Mara and delighted to be in your company up to 11 a.m. this morning. Well, today Aunty Khadija Ibrahim will not be joining us. She will be back next week, inshallah. And we will then do the cupcakes information and all about cupcakes. So we're leaving it for next week, inshallah. In the meantime, here's what you can look forward to in today's program. We commence with home remedies and uses of curry leaves, which you sometimes also call it in the Hindi name as limri as well. Thereafter, we're going to share a bit of information on the Cape Malay cuisine and spices, just a bit of that, as our RI team is in Cape Town, and they're there for the SONA, that's for the State of the Nation address, that will be taking place later today. Thereafter, in the cooking segment, Sister Rabia Umar, who is an author of recipe books, and Sister Rabia is in the studio with me. Assalamu alaikum, Rabia, how are you?
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, I'm good, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, and delighted to be, having you as my guest in the studio today, Rabia.
Jazakallah for giving me the honor of being here with you today.
Jazakallah, certainly my pleasure. Well, Sister Rabia Umar is the author of recipe books called Taste from Heaven, A Selection of Exquisite Delights, and Treasures from Asia as well. And Sister Rabia will be telling us all about, I've chose a theme today on our cooking segment. It's on mutton and lamb. And we're going to be telling you about the differences between mutton and lamb. And Sister Rabia will be telling us on sharing some of her tips on how to cook, how to marinate, how to cut clean, and what best spices to use when you are cooking your lamb and your mutton as well, and what type of dishes are ideal to make with mutton and lamb. And Sister Rabia has also shared with us some lovely recipes. We're going to be sharing with you a methi bhaji with mince recipe and a shahi ghost korma recipe, so that's coming up later on in the program. And well, the question we're asking you today is, do you prefer mutton or lamb? So do you prefer mutton or lamb? You can call in 011-854-1548. You can SMS or WhatsApp me on 082-565-8648. A tweet at Amara Radio Islam or following me on Instagram at Amara_Mula. Let's begin today's program with curry leaf home remedies and uses. Now, Indian cuisine makes use of mint, coriander leaves, curry leaves to add flavor and aroma to the spicy recipes. Though not a part of the greens, curry leaves has all the nutritive value found in greens and more. Now, also known as sweet neem leaves, curry leaves has vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin B2, vitamin C, calcium and iron in plenty. This is an ideal herb for people suffering from the ill effects of diabetics. And diabetes patients often suffer from frequent vertigo. Now, there may be aches and pains in the upper and lower limbs coupled with impaired vision. These patients should take curry leaves at frequent intervals to overcome these problems. Now, here are some remedies that I want to share with you on curry leaves. The first one is on digestive disorders. Fresh juice of curry leaves with lime juice and sugar is an effective medicine in the treatment of morning sickness, nausea, and vomiting due to indigestion and excessive use of fats. 1 or 2 teaspoons of juice of these leaves mixed with a teaspoon of lime juice may be taken in these conditions. The curry leaves ground to a fine paste and mixed with buttermilk can also be taken on an empty stomach, with beneficial results in case of stomach upsets. Tender curry leaves are useful in diarrhea, dysentery, and piles. They should be taken mixed with honey. The bark of the tree is also useful in bilious vomiting. A teaspoon of powder or the mixture of the dry bark should be given with cold water in this condition. Then for kidney disorders, the root of the curry plant also has medicinal properties. The juice of the root can be taken to relieve pain associated with the kidneys. Now, if you're actually having premature graying of hair, you could try this remedy out. Liberal intake of curry leaves is considered beneficial in preventing premature graying of hair. These leaves have the property to nourish the hair roots. New hair roots that grow are healthier with normal pigment. When curry leaves are boiled in coconut oil, till they are reduced to a blackened residue, the oil forms an excellent hair tonic to stimulate hair growth and in retaining the natural pigmentation. So what you do is you take curry leaves and you actually boil it up in coconut oil, and then you apply the oil onto your hair. It's a good hair tonic and also stimulates your hair growth. Then for burns and bruises, curry leaves can be effectively used to treat burns, bruises, and skin eruptions. They should be applied as a poultice over the affected areas. Also for eye disorders, fresh juice of curry leaves suffused in the eyes makes them look bright. It also prevents the early development of cataract. Then for insect bites as well, fruits of the tree which are berries are edible. They are green when raw but purple when ripe. Juice of these berries mixed with equal proportion of lime juice is the effective fluid for external application insect stings and bites of poisonous creatures. Also, you can make a paste of curry leaves and apply it onto the insect bites as well, and this also works wonders. Then for diabetics, eating 10 fresh, fully grown curry leaves every morning for 3 months will help to prevent diabetics due to hereditary factors. It also cures diabetes due to obesity, as the leaves have weight-reducing properties. As the weight drops, the diabetic patients stop passing sugar in urine. Then some tips on cooking with curry leaves. Curry leaves are widely used in Indian dishes. The leaves are usually fried first in a little oil or ghee. Since the cuisine of southern India is predominantly vegetarian, curry leaves are mostly used to flavor lentil and vegetable dishes. However, they are also used in chutneys as well. And so that was part of our health segment, curry leaf home remedies and uses. Let's go for a short break. When we come back, I'm going to be telling you about a little bit about the Cape Malay cuisine and spices. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back. Here's a bit of information on the Cape Malay cuisine. It is said that the secret of the distinctive flavor of Cape Malay cuisine is a careful blend of spices, the most important of which turmeric, that's arad, or we say bori, incorporated into an area of tasty traditional dishes. And some of the spices used in Cape Malay cuisine is ginger, garlic, chili, star anise, fennel, that's fennel. Then you get jeera, that's cumin. Then coriander, also known as coriander, bay leaf, cardamom, cloves, dhania, coriander leaf, mustard seeds, allspice, mint, fenugreek, saffron, nutmeg, and tamarind. And also some examples of Cape Malay cuisine that have survived to tempt palates to today include smoor snook. Snook covered over a fire or simmered with onions and tomatoes. Then you get omens on the combers, old person under the blanket. That's just a dish, yes. Then you get meat patties wrapped in cabbage leaves as well. Then you get fricadelles, you get a slow-cooked leg of lamb with chili, spices and vinegar. And babuti as well, that's meatloaf with onions, sultanas, almonds, bay leaves and spices topped with egg custard. And also you find that lots of the Cape Malay sweet dishes are also like kusisters. Then you get savouries like tau cheese. Then again you get bredies, you get bubur. Then you get sambals, which is basically like a kachumar. You get pickled fish, you get variety of fish dishes. You get susatis. And Cape Town is also very famous for dried fruit and nuts. So that was a bit of information on Cape Malay cuisine indeed. Well, let's now go on to the cooking segment of the program. And like I said earlier on, Sister Rabia Umar is my guest in the studio, and she's the author of 3 very tasty, inspiring, informative, different recipes. And her recipe book, she actually compiled 3 recipe books: A Taste from Heaven, A Selection of Exquisite Delights, and Treasures from Asia. So, assalamu alaikum and welcome once again, Rabia.
Wa alaikum assalam, jazakallah.
Now, Rabia, what inspired you to compile recipe books?
I've always enjoyed cooking. I come from a family where everyone appreciates good food. I guess that has been my main inspiration.
Mm. And yes, you actually do come from a cooking background, and basically that's become your passion of food as well.
Yes, it has.
Alhamdulillah. Now, when did your passion for food actually begin, Rabia?
It's been a very long journey. I was quite young. I started cooking at an early age of 12 and never stopped since then, never looked back.
Alhamdulillah. And I think from then you probably, you know, tried different types of dishes out, different types of cuisines out.
Yes, I have. I enjoy adventuring into different cuisines and trying different recipes. Sometimes I also have my flops and, you know, the good recipes, the bad recipes. But I guess that is the main way to try out a recipe and know whether that is what you're looking for or not. Every kitchen has trial and error. Without that, I think every kitchen would be incomplete.
Indeed, absolutely. Now, Rabia, you've put together three books already.
Yes.
A Taste from Heaven, Treasures from Asia, and A Selection of Exquisite Delights. Tell us about these books.
Okay, the first book was published in the year 2000. That one is A Selection of Exquisite Delights. It contains quick and easy recipes and has been quite successful, alhamdulillah. It covers chicken dishes, lamb dishes, seafood, steaks, biscuits, and cakes. The second book was A Taste from Heaven, published in 2001. This one covers Indian food recipes like savories, chutneys, casseroles, rice dishes, more like our everyday rice dishes, dal and rice, curry khichdi, biryanis, and a range of sweet dishes as well. The last book was Treasures from Asia, that was published in 2004. This one is a bit different to the other two. It covers Indo-Chinese, North Indian, and Pakistani cuisine. I've also added a vegetable section as well as desserts. In this book, you will find recipes for chow mein, Manchurian, lamb korma, chicken tikka masala, prawn sherwani, and so forth. So these are the three books that I have compiled so far.
Alhamdulillah. And are you busy with another one?
Inshallah, I am busy at the moment, but I can give no fixed time when it's going to be released. Inshallah, I hope to write a fourth book, and I'm trying to concentrate on Turkish and Middle Eastern cuisine in that one.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to cover a section on desserts as well. With the desserts, I'd like to put in Arabian Middle Eastern desserts like baklava, basbousa. You know, it's mostly the unusual kind of desserts. And I'd like to take it further from there, where I would like to put in Turkish Middle Eastern savories as well. I have thought of a few recipes. I am busy in the compilation, but at the moment I cannot give a fixed time when that book is going to be published.
Well, that sounds absolutely superb, yes. Now, Rabia, when you are putting together recipe books, how did you determine which recipes to include?
It's tough to write recipes for everyone. Taste is subjective. It's difficult to wrangle every single detail into instructions that will work for a variety of people. I chose easy-to-cook recipes for my first edition, judging today's lifestyle, and tried to create a cookbook that made life easy for the working woman.
Mm.
So the first cookbook, that's A Selection of Exquisite Delight, has a lot of recipes that are quick and easy to prepare. And alhamdulillah, that is why I think that book has been appreciated by quite a few people worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yes. Now also, do you create your own recipes, Rabia?
Yes, I do, definitely. A lot of my recipes have been inspired by international cuisines. Though I may not be the typical foodie type, I'm not the person that will just, tell you that I want to eat this and I want to eat that. But yes, I am very adventurous when it comes to cooking. Most of the credit, however, goes to my mother and my grandmother, both being aspiring cooks. If it was not for them, I would have never come this far.
So, and we learn from the elderly ladies.
Yes, I do. And I have been very lucky in my upbringing that I didn't only have my mom with me, I had my nanny, my granny with me as well. So you can say I've been blessed in having, two mothers that helped me, you know, mostly in the kitchen, in a lot of aspects of life. If it hadn't been for them, I don't think I would have got this far.
Alhamdulillah. Now, have you ever changed your style of cooking over the years?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
Not at all. I have my way of cooking, and that is exactly the way I follow. There is no compromise on that.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say are the most important keys to success for the home cook?
There's a lot of things for success to the home cook, passion is the first key ingredient to anything that you do in life, whether it's cooking, sewing, studying, anything at all. You've got to like what you do and enjoy every moment of it. The second thing would be tasting, seasoning, and the balance of using your ingredients correctly and according to ratio. If you don't balance your ingredients, you either end up with an over-spicy curry or you end up with something that is quite bland. It doesn't have that that taste at the end of the day. You know, you cook, you put your time in it, but if you don't balance your spices, there isn't a ratio to that, you're obviously going to end up with cooking that is not up to standard. Last but not least, it's imperative to develop an extremely well-tuned palate. If you've got a palate that can differentiate between taste, that makes cooking a lot easier.
Well, great advice that I've learned, you know, something new to balance your spices, indeed, yes, okay. We're going to talk more about that later. Let's go for a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you all about mutton and lamb, the difference, all the differences between mutton and lamb, and share with the listeners also tips to wash it, cut it, store it, buy it, marinate it, and what type of dishes are ideal with mutton and lamb. And we've got two delicious recipes. Sister Rabia is actually going to be sharing with us. It's a Mehti Bhaji with mince recipe and a Shahi Ghost Korma coming up later on in the program. The question we're asking you today is, do you prefer mutton or lamb? You can SMS or WhatsApp on 082-565-8648, a tweet at Amara Radio Islam, or follow me on Instagram at Amara_Mullah. Stay tuned. Let's now go into the cooking segment of the program, and our theme for today is on mutton and lamb. And Sister Rabia is going to be telling us, what is the difference between lamb and mutton, Rabia?
Lamb is usually a sheep that is typically under 1 year of age, usually a lot more tender than mutton, obviously because of the age. Mutton is usually from sheep older than a year. Mutton usually produces a richer flavor but can be tough if not cooked properly. In certain countries, however, goat meat is also called mutton, but in South Africa, it's usually, mature lamb that we refer to as mutton.
Mm-hmm, yes. Now, when purchasing lamb and mutton, what should actually one look out for, Rabia?
A-grade is usually the best lamb to buy. Otherwise, I'd say trust your butcher and ask him or her for the best, because they are the ones that can help us and give us the best meat.
Mm-hmm, yes. Also, you know, when it comes to marinating your mutton and lamb, what is the ideal way?
Mutton and lamb, since it is a bit tough to cook in comparison to chicken, the first thing that one should consider is tenderizer. Tenderizer could be a lot of things. A main tenderizer that I usually use is ginger and garlic to tenderize the meat. Marinating is the primary stage of cooking. The most important stage is the cooking part. How you cook lamb and mutton makes the great difference in driving the final taste of the recipe. If mutton or lamb is not cooked right, you know, where you don't burn the juices accordingly, where you don't set your heat accordingly, that plays a very important part in your final result of your dish.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like it when you say you actually use your ginger garlic to actually tenderize it. So one of the, you know, we always sometimes use zeal. We use sometimes meat tenderizer.
Zeal wouldn't be a very good option. Zeal is actually a flavoring agent. I wouldn't call it a tenderizer. It's got more flavor. It may tenderize the meat a little bit, but then again, it changes the flavor of the dish. Another natural ingredient that is very good in tenderizing mutton and lamb is pawpaw.
Okay.
Not the ripe one, the green pawpaw. Usually grated and then added to the meat, that also causes it to get a bit tender. And another ingredient that is also very important in tenderizing lamb and meat is yogurt, plain yogurt. Though all recipes don't call for it, it's just certain recipes that usually call for that. So in the recipes that call for the yogurt, that is quite imperative in marinating the lamb or mutton.
Okay. Well, that's quite interesting, you know, when you say that zeal is more like to add flavor,
yeah.
And the green pawpaw.
It's more a flavoring agent.
So when
than,
you use the green pawpaw, do you grate it?
It's okay if you grate it, you can mash it. That depends entirely up to you. What I usually would recommend is, though I don't use it a lot since green pawpaws are not readily available, is try and maybe grate it and freeze it.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time you need for a kilo, you can use about a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of the pawpaw.
Mm-hmm.
And it does help, you know, in marinating and tenderizing the lamb and the mutton. Another ingredient that is now readily available is meat tenderizer.
Okay, yes.
However, we have to be very careful of the halal option.
Mm.
There are a lot of times where meat tenderizer is not halal, so you've got to be quite, you know, conscious of that. And you have to try and use that when you do get the halal option available. That also helps a lot in tenderizing the meat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, you spoke about the heat.
Yeah.
Now, when you're marinating your mutton and you're putting all your spices in,
uh-huh.
And on what heat should you actually cook it initially?
When you first cook meat, you've got to have a high heat.
Mm.
That will, it retains the juices of the meat. Whereas if you put it very low, it takes very long to burn off that excess juices. So what I usually do is when I initially put it on the stove, I use a higher heat and then reduce my heat and cook over a low temperature until it's done. For meat, a very quick cooking process usually spoils the flavor of the meat. For lamb or mutton, lamb usually cooks a lot quicker than mutton, but reducing your temperature and letting it cook over low heat usually makes it tender and retains the original flavor of the meat itself.
Interesting. Well, we're learning. I'm learning today. Yes, I'm sure all the listeners out there also are. Now, also, Rabia, what would be the... we're going to come to that one. Now, sometimes mutton or lamb has a meaty smell or taste. How can one overcome this when cooking?
The smell that is that you usually get from mutton or lamb is usually from the retained blood in the meat.
Mm.
I prefer to soak meat for a while before cooking. I don't like to just rinse it, you know, under running water and put it into my pot. I prefer letting it soak for a couple of hours before I cook it. And if it's not a couple of hours, even 1 or 2 hours. But what I usually do is change the water consistently, like every an hour. You know, you change the water. A lot of people have advised on the use of a bit of vinegar and salt as well when soaking meat. There is a bit of... you know, there is a bit of a question mark on this where a lot of people say, what's the point of soaking the meat and you get rid of the vitamins and, you know, the nutrition in the meat. But, well, that all depends on the type of cook that you are. And I am the type of cook that obviously would not settle for that smelly aftertaste of the meat.
Not me either.
So with me, I would rather soak the meat before cooking. Obviously, thereafter, it's entirely up to you. What you would like to do, whether you want to just give it a single rinse and cook it. But remember, even when you do that, when you give it a single rinse and cook, be sure that the first water of the lamb or mutton burns out completely before you let it cook further.
Okay.
That would mean when you put it into the pot, let that water that has, you know, come out, the juices that come out from the lamb or mutton, let that burn out completely before adding more liquid to tenderize the mutton or the lamb.
You need to braise your mutton as
you've
well.
You've got to. Definitely, you've got to. And that is where the higher heat setting comes in. If you're going to do it over low heat, it's going to take very long. You're going to get rid of the flavor of the meat as well. And then slowly, slowly, the retained blood comes out, you know, in a slow process, giving it that meaty aftertaste.
Mm. For me, the vinegar works well when you're soaking your meat.
Yeah, it does.
It works very
well. Another thing that I have used in the past is turmeric, the bori powder. You can even soak with that. That gets rid of the smelly, you know, meaty smell when cooking.
Okay. Then also, what are the best spices to use when marinating mutton or lamb? Obviously, the best fresh spices as well.
That's a complicated question, I'd say. That would depend on what you will be making with the lamb or mutton. If you, obviously, if you're doing something like grill, you're doing a braai, then you're going to be using selected spices, mostly dry spices. Whereas the choice of spices for curries, biryanis, etc., will be totally different. So you've got to choose your dish first before you decide on the best spices for marinating the lamb or mutton.
Okay. Then also, what type of dishes are basically ideal when using lamb or mutton?
Mutton is ideally used for stews and curries, and as I've mentioned before, it requires slow cooking. Lamb generally tastes better, and I would rather opt for lamb in all my dishes. I'm a person that would rather go for the younger category. It cooks a lot faster, it's a lot tender. So for me, I would like to use more lamb than mutton.
Mm-hmm. And does it go for chops as well?
Well, chops, if you like the bigger chops, you know, if you're going to grill, then you can go for mutton. Mutton chops are a lot larger than the lamb chops. So for grilling option, I would rather suggest that you go for the mutton.
And I find the chops have a more smell than the mutton. I don't know if you agree with me.
Totally agree. The reason for that being chops have a lot more fat on it.
Okay.
The fat is the main cause of that smell in the end result of the dish. So a lot of people like to cut away most fat when you're using leg mutton. The main reason being that the fat gives off that meaty smell.
Mm.
But then again, the fat itself, the fat that is on the meat itself, that works as a tenderizer as well.
Mm.
So there again, it would be totally up to choice. When you leave, you've got to notice that when you leave fat onto the lamb or mutton, your meat will cook a lot faster than when you cut off or cut away all the fat.
Mm.
So that is why chops does have a bit more of the meaty and the smelly taste after cooking, mm-hmm. because of the fat in chops, and you cannot cut away much of that fat anyways.
Mm-hmm. Let's just quickly come back to the spices. Do you use whole jeera or fine jeera, the powdered jeera, in mutton or lamb?
I use both. I like the flavor of cumin, that's jeera. I use both. I use the crushed and the whole. It depends on the recipe or on what I'm cooking, but usually I prefer to use both, the crushed jeera and the whole jeera.
Okay. Another thing that comes to mind is cooking mutton in a pressure cooker. What's your take on that?
I'll be honest with you, I do it a lot of times.
Pressure cooker. I only use a pressure cooker.
Yes.
And that is for curry, yeah?
Yeah. The thing that with a pressure cooker is that I use the pressure cooker a lot of time because we've got hectic lifestyles. We want the mutton or lamb to get cooked quickly. So we prefer using a faster method of cooking. But if you want to really retain the proper taste of mutton and lamb, I would say don't go for the pressure cooker. The flavor that you get when cooking mutton or lamb in a pot over normal and medium heat until it's tender, you will not get that end result in a pressure cooker.
No, it's true.
But one advice that I can give you is when I cook mutton or lamb in a pressure cooker, what I usually do is if the recipe calls for onion, fried onions, or you know where you saute the onions, you add your meat in, what I usually do then is I add my tenderizers like ginger, garlic, I'll add the salt and I'll add the turmeric powder, that's it. I cook the meat only with those four spices, just that four ingredients. When the lamb or the mutton is almost done, that is when I add in my other spices.
Mm-hmm.
So that what that does is it retains the color of the lamb.
Okay.
I don't know if you've noticed when cooking in a pressure cooker, I don't know if you have noticed this personally, but lamb and mutton tends to change color in a pressure cooker.
Yes.
It gets a lot darker than its original color.
True.
And it doesn't look as appetizing as when you're cooking it over normal heat in a pot. So by doing this where you don't, I think the chili and the, you know, the garam masalas, the jeera, the coriander powder, that is what darkens the meat.
Mm.
And then what it does is the true flavor of the spices get incorporated into that. So by cooking this way, I have found it to be a lot better when using a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm. Jazakallah for sharing those lovely tips. I've learned so much about microwave and lamb today.
You're welcome.
Yes, we'll go for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be sharing with you those lovely recipes Sister Rabia has actually put together. And she's going to be sharing with us, it's a magic purge with mince, a shiny coarse korma, so you can get your pens and papers or recipe books on hand to jot down these lovely recipes. Stay tuned. And welcome back. Well, we're going now into the recipe segment of the program, and we're going to be commence with starting with the Mechi Purchi with mince recipe, Sister Rabia. This recipe is a very, looks a very delicious, divine recipe. A different way compared to the way I cook it, but I suppose everybody has a different way of cooking a Mechi Purchi and mince.
Exactly.
So your way seems quite different indeed, and well, you can go ahead and share with us the recipe.
Okay, for the methi bhaji with mince recipe, you require 250 grams of mutton or chicken mince, 3 cups of chopped methi bhaji, 1/2 a cup of frozen peas. You can use the tuver, you get it in a tin, you can use that if you don't want to use the peas. 3 potatoes cut into 4s, 2 large onions sliced or chopped, 1/4 cup of oil, 2 tomatoes chopped, 1 heaped teaspoon salt that can be adjusted according to taste, 1 teaspoon fine red chilies, 1 teaspoon ground green chilies. That again can be adjusted according to taste. It depends on how hot and spicy you would like your dish to be. 1/4 teaspoon crushed black pepper. 2 teaspoon ground coriander powder or dhana powder. 1/2 teaspoon whole cumin seeds or jeera. 1/2 teaspoon turmeric powder, also known as arad. 1 teaspoon ginger paste. 1 teaspoon garlic paste. And 2 whole dry red chilies. For the method, heat oil, add sliced or chopped onions and fry until light brown in color. Heat oil, add sliced onions or chopped onions and fry until light brown in color. Add mince, salt, ginger paste, garlic paste, and turmeric powder. Add mince, salt, ginger paste, garlic paste, and turmeric powder. Cook this over medium heat until mince starts to stick at the bottom of the pot. That way what you do is you get rid of all the extra juices and extra water in the mince.
Okay.
Sometimes the mince tends to get lumpy, so what you just do is you break the mince lumps with the back of a spoon. Thereafter, add tomatoes, fine red chilies, ground green chilies, the coriander powder, whole cumin, and frozen peas. Thereafter, add tomatoes, fine red chilies, ground green chilies, coriander powder, whole cumin, and frozen peas. It's not working, I think.
Okay.
Is it working?
Continue, yes.
Oh, okay. Continue cooking over medium heat until all the moisture evaporates. Add 1 cup of water together with methi bhaji and potatoes. Cook until all moisture evaporates and potatoes are cooked through. The whole dry red chilies I usually use as a garnish. So I garnish with the whole red dry chilies and serve together with homemade rotis.
This recipe sounds really absolutely divine, a very different way of cooking vegetables and mince. Different to me indeed, yes. So I must quickly run through the ingredients again. You will require 250 grams of mutton or chicken mince. Can you use steak mince, Rabia?
Certainly. It's up to you what you would like to use.
Okay. 3 cups chopped metaburgy. Then you will also need a half a cup frozen peas. 3 potatoes cut into 4s. Then 2 large onions sliced or chopped. 1/4 cup oil, 2 tomatoes chopped. You will also require 1/2 teaspoon salt. That's for tasting as well.
Yes.
1 teaspoon fine red chilies. Then 1 teaspoon of ground green chilies. 1/4 teaspoon crushed black pepper. 2 teaspoons ground coriander, that's your dhania. Then 1/2 teaspoon whole cumin, that's your jeera. Then 1/2 teaspoon of your arad. 1 teaspoon of ginger paste and 1 teaspoon of garlic paste and 2 whole dry red chilies. Now for the method, you heat your oil, then you add your sliced, your chopped onions and you fry it till it's light brown in color.
Yes.
Then you add your mince with your salt, your ginger paste and garlic paste and turmeric powder. Then you cook that, your mince
until nice and dry,
and your mince has to stick to the bottom of the pot.
Yes, and that way you know that all the moisture has evaporated from the mince itself.
Okay. And if you feel your mince is lumpy, then take the back of the spoon and remove all the lumps.
Yes.
Okay. Thereafter, you add your tomatoes, your fine red chilies, your ground green chilies, your coriander powder, your whole cumin, and your frozen peas. And you continue.
Sorry, Amara, just 1 second.
Okay.
If you don't use green chilies a lot in your cooking, you can omit the green chilies altogether. Increase the red chilies if you want it hot, or you can just omit the green chilies altogether.
Okay. Okay. Then you continue cooking over medium heat until all the moisture evaporates. Then you add 1 cup of water together with your metaburgy and your potatoes and cook until moisture evaporates and potatoes are cooked through, and garnish with whole dry red chilies and serve together with homemade rotis. This recipe sounds divine, Rabia.
Jazakallah.
Let's now go to the next recipe. It is Shahi Ghost Korma recipe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for the Shahi Ghost Korma, you will need a 1 kg lamb cut into convenient size pieces. 1 kg lamb cut into convenient size pieces. 1 teaspoon ground green chilies. Here again, if you don't want to use the ground green chilies, you can omit it altogether. And you can either increase the red chilies or you can keep it at that. It
okay.
depends on how hot you would like your dish to be. 1 teaspoon fine red chilies. 1 teaspoon ground coriander seeds, that's dhania powder. 2 teaspoon ginger garlic mix or 2 teaspoon ginger paste. The ginger garlic mix is usually available at a lot of stores. I usually make my own. So it's 1 kilo ginger to about 1/4 kilo garlic.
Okay.
But if you don't have that, it's fine. You can just add 2 teaspoon of ginger paste. 1 teaspoon ground garlic paste. 1/2 teaspoon of whole cumin seeds or jeera seeds. 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric powder. 1 heaped teaspoon salt. 3 sticks cinnamon. A few whole peppercorns, 2 sliced onions, 2 chopped tomatoes, 125 milliliter plain yogurt, 1/2 cup of coriander leaves chopped, that is for garnish, and 1/2 cup of melted ghee. So that's 1 kg lamb, 1 teaspoon ground green chilies, 1 teaspoon fine red chilies, 1 teaspoon of ground coriander seeds or dhania powder, 2 teaspoon ground ginger or ginger paste, 1 teaspoon garlic paste, 1/2 teaspoon of whole cumin seeds, 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric powder, 1 heaped teaspoon salt, 3 sticks cinnamon, whole peppercorns, just a few of them, 2 sliced onions. I'd say take large onions for this, not the small ones, 2 tomatoes chopped, 125 milliliter plain yogurt, half a cup of chopped coriander leaves for garnish, and a half a cup of melted ghee. Now for method, heat ghee and fry onions until light brown. Add meat and spices, all the spices. Cook for 15 minutes. That would mean you cook until all the water has burnt out, so you know you retain the flavor. And then you add the tomatoes and the yogurt. Cook this over low heat for over an hour or until tender, adding water, just enough water, if and when necessary. Leave on medium heat until ghee separates. Garnish with coriander leaves and serve with rogan naan or crispy rolls.
That's lovely, Rabia. Lovely recipe. That's a Shahi Kosh Korma recipe. Now, basically this recipe, you need to cook it on high first and then bring down your heat as
well.
Yes,
yes.
And this, it's better with lamb.
Yeah, anytime.
Okay, indeed, because it's more tender.
Yes, it's tender, it's quicker to cook, and as I mentioned before, I prefer lamb over mutton.
And I think the plain yogurt would definitely still tenderize all your meat and bring out all the juices and the taste as well.
A lot of people usually ask me a question if they can substitute, you know, using sour milk for plain yogurt. You can, there's no hard and fast rules that you can't, but plain yogurt gives it a different flavor altogether. It's a lot more creamy, it's got a different texture, so when cooking with plain yogurt, you get a better end result than when the recipe calls for sour milk. When the recipe asks for the sour milk, you can use the sour milk, but in recipes like this, there may be a time when you don't want to go out of your way to go and buy the yogurt. You can use the yogurt in that instance, you can use the sour milk in that instance, but if it's 125 milliliter plain yogurt, you're going to have to increase your sour milk to maybe 200 milliliters of sour milk.
Okay, then this one says, Salam's great show. Would like to know if a pressure cooker alters the taste of meat. Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
It definitely does. And her sister wants to know, her daughter's getting married. What book should she buy for her?
If your daughter's getting married, the best book any mother can give her daughter would be The Indian Delights. It covers A to Z of cooking. You can get everything in there. I think it's a must in every home, no matter what a great cook you are. But Zuleika Mayat's Indian Delight is a must in every home.
Yes, definitely. And this one says, Salam, I like to cook mutton. I have Sister Rabia's books, lovely recipes. I've tried many.
Jazakallah
for that, sister. And yes, so we've come to the end of a lovely program. Very informative, Rabia. Say Jazakallah to you as well.
Jazakallah.
And Rabia, you're also on Instagram. What's your Instagram address?
It's author_RabiaUmar on Instagram.
Okay, it's author_RabiaUmar.
FG.
So those who want to actually follow Rabia as well. Rabia, Jazakallah khair for actually, you know, sharing some lovely information, sharing the recipes. I've learned so much in
this. If anybody's got any inquiries or they would like to find out anything, they're welcome to call me or they can WhatsApp me on 083-572-4905. Once again, that's 083-572-4905. I'll be glad to help you wherever I can. So, Jazakallah khair once again for having me at the studio. May Allah reward you, and inshallah, I hope to speak to you all again soon.
Gee, inshallah, we will get you soon back. Yes, alhamdulillah. I really enjoyed it. Yes.
Jazakallah
Rabia. Well, inshallah, back with you on Thursday with Auntie Karecha Ibrahim as well, and then we will be doing cupcakes as well. So, next week, the cupcakes, inshallah. So, from me, Amara, and my guest, Rabia Umar, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.